information is free.
The law.
There is hope.
When ignorance is converted into knowledge.
Tonight we care.
Here to border
on the
fence. The law.
The country.
You will remember now you have seen or heard here.
Whether he went on with the diary, or whether he did not cooperate, it made no difference. The thought police would get him just the same.
Standing on the edge of some crazy cliff, I have to catch everybody if they start to go over. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to episode 155 of Media Monarchy. It's January 29th, 2010. My name is James Evan Pilato, and I'm your host and webmaster of MediaMonarchy.com, your source for alternative news, politics, conspiracies, and cover-ups. We have so much this week. Salinger, Zinn, and the State of the Republic, social political chaos in a one-term president, Emmanuel Goldstein, econo-crash updates in Davos' death, news purge, rare words in Louisiana Watergate, plus all the latest from Corber Reports, Peace Revolution, Food World Order, and Cyberspace War. It's all here, January 29th, 2010, episode 155 from MediaMonarchy.com.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
Like a secret society meeting at the midnight mass. That's brand new music from the Halifax, Nova Scotia band known as Sloan. Brand new music from them from their new Hit and Run EP. And I'm stoked. They're one of my favorite bands. I've loved them for longer than I care to remember. They're coming to Portland very soon. But enough about that. We'll save all that for the next Media Monarchy mixtape episode. But where we are now is January 29th, 2010. This is the 155th episode of MediaMonarchy.com. That's a lot. And I got to thank the mothership where I'm sitting right now in the HQ. They put me on the air. They let me start doing this. 3.5 years ago. So big thanks to the Portland Radio Authority, praradio.org, blasting out live every Friday morning at 10 a.m. Pacific time. And a huge thanks to our awesome affiliates who restream, rebroadcast Media Monarchy. However, the other two biggies, I love it. They blasted out live right now, 11 a.m. Mountain Time. Casper, Wyoming, 92.3 FM and 1670 AM, all thanks to ZeroPointRadio.com. We're over in the chat room on ZeroPointRadio.com. And, of course, signed into Messenger and Skype. But we'll get to that. Zero Point Radio, of course, carries my man Clyde Lewis, who's back in the big leagues on KUFO here in Portland, Oregon. But the other station that carries Media Monarchy live for you, the worldwide home of free speech, revereradio.net, 1 p.m. over on the East Coast, and all the rest. 98.5 FM in Olympia, Washington, thanks to Free Radio Olympia, frolympia.org. 104.1 FM in Berkeley, California, thanks to berkeleyliberationradio.net. 87.9 in Canton, Georgia, thanks to stickam.com/groundzeroradio. Not to be confused with Clyde Lewis. 90.7 FM, KWMD in Kasilof, Alaska, thanks to OneSkyRadio.com. My man Glenn at CascadiaPublicRadio.org. Jeff at Radio23.org. That's Radio23.org. And also, we're still kicking it in Boulder, Colorado, thanks to the mysterious folks at PhantomRadio.org. So like I said, we're on Skype and Instant Messenger as we're doing the show. Of course, Media Monarchy is your keyword to all the social network holes. Facebook.com/Media Monarchy, MySpace.com/Media Monarchy, Twitter.com/, YouTube.com/. Of course, emails, MediaMonarchy@Yahoo or Gmail. And the podcasts and the videos are up on iTunes and archive.org. And of course, all the shows, radioforall.net. And again, the best way, I've been trying to repeat this because I think it works the best, feeds.feedburner.com/Media Monarchy. Put that into iTunes. You'll get all the radio shows as well as the videos, The New World Next Week that I do with James Corbett of CorbettReport.com. Those come sliding down the other side as MP4s, which are ready for your Apple device of choice. Oh, and speaking of New World Next Week, which we'll cover later in the show, I meant to mention last week, and this is, you know, I don't want to toot my own back or pat myself on the horn. I was at my jobby job the other day, where I work with the public, and I'm doing my thing, and a couple walks by, and they turn around and come back, and the guy, "Are you James Evan Pilato?" Yeah. He's like, "Oh man, I watch your videos with James Corbett." So, Brian and Emily, you're awesome. A little strange to get spotted in public, and that's been the interesting thing about doing videos with James Corbett, is again, I'm used to hiding in the radio, and no one exactly knows what I look like, but now it's all out there, but again, we're not afraid. I try not to hide behind, you know, pseudonyms and all that stuff. And folks who do that online, that's up to them. But we're not doing anything illegal here. We're not doing anything we should be ashamed of here. We're data mining and collecting information and trying to spread it to everybody out there who needs it, who's interested in it, who wants it. All the alternative news, politics, conspiracies, and cover-ups, I put them up for you on MediaMonarchy.com. I don't try to make up your mind for you, but we're nonpartisan here. Something ain't right. You know it in your gut. We've got so much to get over, go over, and get over, I suppose. So let's dive right in. Let's look at Google News right now on this January 29th morning of 2010. Scott Roeder convicted of murdering abortion doctor George Tiller. A jury in Wichita deliberated for just over half an hour before finding Scott Roeder guilty. He admitted that he shot George Tiller, who performed late-term abortions at a church last May. If you recall, that swirled around. What we still see pop up from time to time in the clusters and the copycats. The mass murder contagion. We were watching all that last spring and summer. Scott Roeder and Poplawski. All the homegrown errorism. The Obamasiah visits Bodymore. And we also have the administration, I believe as the New York Post put it, blinks on the 9/11 trials in New York. I think Bloomberg doesn't want it. But we have a little bit of 9/11 updates to come in the episode. So that's what's happening right now as I come to you on this Friday morning. But our quote at the beginning of the show, standing on the edge of some crazy cliff, I have to catch everybody if they start to go over, of course, comes from The Catcher in the Rye. Catcher in the Rye novelist J.D. Salinger dies aged 91. And I have to admit, he's one of those folks that when you hear that they pass away, you go, oh, I didn't know they were still alive. From Wikinews, American novelist J.D. Salinger, author of The Catcher in the Rye, has died of natural causes at the age of 91. His son confirms that he died in his New Hampshire home. Salinger was born in New York City in 1919. The author had famously remained a recluse since 1953, shortly after the publication of The Catcher in the Rye, his most famous, infamous work. He very rarely entered the public eye after that date, emerging only for infrequent interviews and lawsuits. And he never even responded to fan mail.
One of the most influential and reclusive American writers has died. J.D. Salinger, who penned Catcher in the Rye and introduced America to the angst-ridden teen Holden Caulfield, died Wednesday at his home in New Hampshire. Salinger became an instant sensation with the publication of the book, which is still read and debated and in some cases banned. The work inspired movies from Rebel Without a Cause to The Breakfast Club. Unfortunately, it was also a motivator for Mark David Chapman, who cited the novel as an inspiration for shooting and killing John Lennon. Salinger wrote a number of short story collections and novellas, but nothing as popular as Catcher in the Rye. J.D. Salinger began shutting himself off to the world in the 50s and 60s. He rarely granted interviews, stopped publishing new works, and even refused fan mail. And the bits and pieces of information about him that did emerge were largely unflattering. True to his form, his exact cause of death hasn't been stated. Simply natural causes. J.D. Salinger was 91. Sandy Kozel, The Associated Press.
His magnum opus was published in 1951 and tells the story of Holden Caulfield, an alienated, rebellious 17-year-old, and his expulsion from an exclusive prep school, but is now known as one of the most influential books of the 20th century. Featuring on Time's top 150 books of all time, Time magazine, of course, started by Henry Luce of Skull and Bones, it's been translated into many languages and sold more than 65 million copies worldwide. It was also carried by Mark David Chapman when he gunned down John Lennon on December 8, 1980. Now add in a little bit of contextual supplemental information for you here. Googling Chapman and Caulfield. And if we hit a link over to Google Books, there's a snippet from Jim Keith's Mind Control, World Control, the late Jim Keith. In 1976, Chapman reportedly ended his job with the YMCA and took a job as a security guard at the insistence of Gene Scott. Chapman moved to Hawaii in 1977 and stayed in the YMC hostel in Honolulu. Chapman also contacted the suicide hotline there and went to the Waikiki Mental Health Clinic. Hawaii has been noted as the location of a mind control assassination training center in the accounts of several intelligence agency defectors. So we know those connections are there. Mark David Chapman is possible Manchurian candidate. Was he even the shooter? Was it the doorman? We do know that he's connected to, I believe, something called World Vision, which is a known CIA connected front, cutout, what have you. So that's all I'm going to say about that. And again, the links are provided. What we try and do here on Media Monarchy is give you the path and get you interested in this stuff. I mean, I'll admit, you know, I'm a little more obsessed than the average person with media. But let's keep moving. Stay on target. The other notable death, going back 2 days to Wednesday, People's History author Howard Zinn, dead at age 87. This from CNN. Noted author and social activist Howard Zinn died of a heart attack Wednesday while traveling, his daughter said. Zinn, author of A People's History of the United States, was 87. People's History, first published in 1980, tells a history not often seen in other books from the perspective of those not in a seat of power. The book was the inspiration for a 2009 documentary narrated by Zinn called The People Speak. I believe that was a History Channel joint. The film highlighted people who spoke up for social change, according to the website, which again, the link is provided to you. Cabot Zinn, that is Zinn's daughter, Myla Cabot-Zinn, the one who announced his passing. She said her father lived a very full and exciting life and that there were many social issues that were very important to him. Above all, she said her father believed that there is no just war. Zinn's death on the day of Obama's first official State of the Union address was underscored by his contribution to a recently released special from The Nation magazine called Obama at One. We've got a clip from Russia today, and I believe that won't be the first time. This isn't our first death we're covering, and this won't be the first clip from, or rather the last clip from RussiaToday.com. So let's get this clip, and then we'll actually check out what he says about Obama at One, and of course, what are the other unfortunate things that Zinn has said.
Today we are remembering Howard Zinn. He died yesterday at 87 years old. Zinn was a historian, a playwright, and a social activist. Many have called him a hero, even a maverick. He definitely produced a different way of thinking for the world to share in. Joining us now from New York to tell us more about Zinn's life and legacy is RT correspondent Anastasia Chirkina. Anastasia, talk to me a little bit about Howard Zinn and what you think that he will be remembered for.
Well, Christine, this is a man who has been dubbed by some American Mahatma, someone who was a man of limitless depth and philosophy. This is a man who was an activist and historian who made history. This was an author of half a century and one of the most well-known authors of the U.S. left. He, among the things that he will be remembered by, will be his commitment to the struggle for justice, for equality, his activism against injustice. He was always a man who was against war. He would say that there's no such thing as a good war. He would say that it's only through the struggle and power of the people that real change would be created in the world. He was a man who was very anti-mainstream, very anti-political establishment. He would say that people, the common American, should really not rely on the politicians, should not feed off of what politicians tell them, but really create a struggle from themselves and not be afraid to speak out. This was a man who was committed to protest, who would protest and speak out against all things important, starting from government repression to things like union workers' rights. And one of his most well-known books is A People's History of the United States. And of course, what this book is really a people's history of the country. It's not a history book that talks about what's been happening to the country through the eyes of the political elite. It's a history that is seen from the eyes of a common American. He drew from his own experiences, from the experiences of his people. And this book was really a timeless masterpiece. It was read by millions. It originally intended as a for general readership. This book is and was taught throughout colleges and high schools throughout the United States. So really a very important work that's really been able to impact the minds of generations. But he's also written many more books. He's also written plays, one play on the anarchist Emma Goldman, another play on called Marx in Soho, about Karl Marx returning to modern day New York and seeing what socialist realities are about nowadays. So really a man of a very deep person, and someone who is going to be greatly missed throughout the country.
So, having said all of that, I don't want to dive into any huge accusations of left gatekeeper and all that kind of stuff. At least not right now. But like I said, let's hop over to The Nation. And the last published bit from Howard Zinn, at least, of course, while he was alive, writing about Obama at one, he says, among other things, I've been searching hard for a highlight. The only thing that comes close is some of Obama's rhetoric. I don't see any kind of a highlight in his actions and policies. As far as disappointments, I wasn't terribly disappointed because I didn't expect that much. I think people are dazzled by Obama's rhetoric, and that people ought to begin to understand that Obama is going to be a mediocre president, which means, in our time, a dangerous president. Unless there's some national movement to push him in a better direction. Some of the links and things that are provided, you can see that he has spoken about a lot of what some refer to as conspiracy theories. Operation Ajax in 1953, the CIA overthrow of Mossadegh in Iran. But then we have this, and this is a flashback to November 2008 on MediaMonarchy.com. Howard Zinn, don't know, don't care about 9/11 questions. That's the quote. Don't know, don't care. Echoing the sentiments of other left heroes like Noam Chomsky or even Amy Goodman. So again, I provide the links for you. Let's save the discussion for the alternative, for a discussion on the alternative to the alternative. That's all I'll say about that for the moment. Moving forward, we did, of course, mention, and of course you know, we had the big speech this week. So let's listen to several minutes from what I think is an important speech. And that's, of course, Ron Paul's State of the Union address, or rather State of the Republic address, where the Honorable Dr. Ron Paul warns of coming social and political chaos.
When the dollar crashes, most likely the purchasing power of all currencies, since all currencies hold dollars as a reserve, will go down as well. This means that dollars and other currencies will go into buying consumer items, precious metals, and other physical properties. Consumer prices will soar, as well as interest rates. the central bank will lose control, and the more they inflate, the worse the confidence becomes. The interest rates will respond to these efforts by rising sharply. If the Fed tries to reverse the run on the dollar, interest rates will also soar, and the pain on American citizens will be of such proportion that political chaos will result. Either scenario leads to political and social chaos, the third event, and the most dangerous. With no ability of the federal government to fund its commitments, international or domestic, major changes will occur in our system. The social unrest will elicit cries for government to exert unusual force to head off a complete breakdown of law and order. The ultimate trap will be set for a system of government claiming to protect a free society. If more power and police authority are not given to the federal government, it will be argued that only anarchy will result. If more government policing power is given, it will mean a lethal threat to civil liberty. Already, we have permitted the notion that a single person, the Attorney General or the President, can decide who is an enemy combatant, thus denying that individual the right of habeas corpus, permitting indefinite detentions without charges made. This attitude towards civil liberties has changed significantly since the fear built around 9/11. Yes, I know, declaring one an enemy combatant is reserved only for the radical Muslims engaged in terrorism against the United States. To be reassured by this reasoning is quite dangerous and naive. Logic should not lead us to equate suspects with terrorists and include American citizens. And yet, this had already been set by precedent. Under difficult circumstances, our political leaders will not be hesitant to use these powers to maintain order. Tragically, the people may even demand it. We are rapidly moving toward a dangerous time in our history. Society as we know it is vulnerable to political and social unrest. This impending crisis comes as a consequence of our flawed foreign and domestic economic policies, a silly notion about money, ignorance about central banking, and ignoring the onerous power and mischief of out-of-control intelligence agencies. Our unsustainable welfare state and a willingness to sacrifice privacy and civil liberties in an attempt to achieve safety and security from an inept government. Dangerous times indeed. What can be done about it? Must we wait for the inevitable and expect to restore our liberties in a street fight against the overwhelming power of the state? Not a good option. The only way that we can prevent blood from running in the streets is to offer a better idea of the proper role of government in a society that desires first and foremost liberty. And that is impossible without a firm commitment by our thought leaders to the ideas of freedom, the source of all creative energy and prosperity. An all-powerful state is the threat to that idea. The prevailing attitude of the people, as it once was in early America, must be that of liberty and self-reliance, rather than the nanny-state and dependency. Rely on the government force to mold all private choices. If this is understood, a smooth, although not painless, transition to a free society is achievable. Ignoring this option will be very destructive to everything that is dear to the hearts of most Americans. What is it that we must do? We must immediately embark on balance the budget by reducing spending, change our foreign policy so to that of non-intervention, a full audit and more supervision of the Federal Reserve, leading to abolishing the Federal Reserve, legalize competition to the Federal Reserve with competing currencies, regain respect for civil liberties and privacy while reining in the CIA, wean ourselves off the dependence of wealth transfers by government, abolish crony capitalism, no subsidies, no bailouts, no regulatory or tax privileges to protect the powerful elite, especially the military-industrial complex. Eliminate the income tax, the inheritance tax, and taxes on savings and dividends. None of this can happen without the restoration of Congress to its dominant position of the three branches of government, as was originally intended by the Constitution. The executive and the judicial must be reined in, and Congress must assert its prerogative over all legislation curtailing all unconstitutional agenda through budgetary control. Signs abound that angry Americans are now more ready than ever before for a change in direction that is indeed real. If this program were improvised, even suddenly and dramatically, the adjustment, though significant and to a degree somewhat painful, would be much shorter and of minor consequence compared to the chaos and poverty that will result if we refuse to change our gluttonous appetite for a free lunch.
Texas Congressman Ron Paul delivered a riveting State of the Republic address on his Campaign for Liberty website, orating his thoughts on where the U.S. stands as a nation and what the future holds. Paul warns that if the country continues along the course it's on, we will witness a three-stage slide into social and political chaos, beginning with the current financial crisis, a coming dollar crisis, and culminating in mass unrest. The full speech, the transcript, available, campaignforliberty.com. So this is posted up under warnings of social political chaos and how to fire Bernanke. This was posted up Monday, January 25th, and as an addendum, I have a couple bits from Webster Tarpley, tarpley.net. Mobilize now to oust Bernanke as Fed chair. However, it ended up not happening. And we'll get to the reappointment of Helicopter Ben in just a few minutes. So that was my little joke there about that being the important speech of the week that everyone should have watched. Can you imagine, actually, stop for a moment and think of folks watching that all across America, all across the world, instead of what they watched Wednesday night with the Obamasiah? I also noted, because I did, I checked in on the stream and watched a little bit of the speech and tried to point out to folks over on Facebook.com/Media Monarchy, a place to annoy your friends and family with uncomfortable news. I told people, hey, check out those things hanging up on the wall back behind him. See those bundles of sticks with the axe head? Now look at this Nazi stamp that has, gosh, it has the exact same symbolism on it. But anyway, let's get to a little bit of Obamasiah. And we're all over the place in this episode. We have so much to go over. It might not all flow in the perfect form, but again, if you're only listening to the show and not checking out MediaMonarchy.com, you're missing out on a lot. Obama would rather be a really good one-term president.
Ever in the middle of all this coming at you think maybe one term is enough?
You know, I would say that the one thing I'm clear about is that I'd rather be a really good one-term president than a mediocre two-term president. And I believe that. There's a tendency in Washington to think that our job description of elected officials is to get reelected. That's not our job description. Our job description is to solve problems and to help people. And you know, that's not just the view of elected officials themselves. That's also the filter through which the media reads things. Maybe the reason I can say this with confidence is I've gone through this before. I went through this through the campaign. When your poll numbers drop, you're an idiot. When your poll numbers are high, you're a genius. If my poll numbers are low, then I'm cool and cerebral and cold and detached. If my poll numbers are high, boy, he's calm and reasoned. Right? So that's the filter through which a lot of this stuff is interpreted.
So Obama greeted ABC World News anchor and Council on Foreign Relations member Diane Sawyer with a kiss to begin their interview on Monday. This, I guess, sort of being the Barbara Walters before the Oscars version of CFR before the State of the Union. But an awkward moment soon followed when Sawyer asked the president if the job was ever so difficult that he would consider not running for a second term. I'd rather be a really good one-term president than a mediocre two-term president. And I agree with him. There is an anonymous comment on this posting. It's a shame he's been such a mediocre one-term president so far. Anyway, at this point in history, we might as well do away with the facade of presidents and admit the government is run by and for corporations. Interesting related story here from Cleveland.com. Obama has suspicious number of letter-writing fans named Ellie Light. And if you check out this article, you'll see that it has been discovered that all around the country, showing up in op-ed slots and letters to the editor sections of local and regional newspapers, are a bunch of pro-Obamasiah letters, all signed by someone named Ellie Light, all with the different addresses in all the different states, like they live in all those states. Sometimes the posts and the stories transition better than I think that they will. You know, I come from college radio back east, so I'm a good programmer. That's been one of my good skills. I can make good playlists and film lists and apparently news lists. So speaking of imaginary people, Emmanuel Goldstein releases a new Osama to Obama audio tape. So from the Big Brother Corporation, BBC, Bin Laden tape with quotes around it, Bin Laden, warns Obama of more attacks. A tape said to be from al-Qaeda leader Emmanuel Goldstein, Tim Osman, OSS man, Osama bin Laden. He's warned Obama there will be more attacks if the U.S. continues to support Israel. In the newly released audio tape aired on Al Jazeera, bin Laden says the U.S. will never live in peace until there's peace in Palestine. The authenticity of the audio tape has not been verified. The message claims al-Qaeda was behind the December 25th attempt to blow up a passenger plane bound for the U.S. The voice recording says that the message is from Osama to Obama. Now, we return to RussiaToday.com with a quick clip with Wayne Madsen asking the musical question, where in the world is Osama bin Laden?
Osama bin Laden, is he dead or alive? Over the weekend, an audio tape was released in which the al-Qaeda leader praised the attempted Christmas Day bombing on a U.S. airliner. This new tape has led many to believe that bin Laden is indeed alive, but as with many al-Qaeda tapes, its authenticity has its skeptics. Joining me now, one of those skeptics, investigative reporter and RT contributor, Wayne Madsen. Wayne, I want to thank you for being here in our studios. Now, you're saying that you believe that Osama bin Laden is not alive, that it's not his voice on those tapes. Why do you think that, and where are you getting your evidence?
Well, many in the intelligence community doubt the authenticity of this particular audio tape, because these tapes, both audio and some videotapes, are often found on these jihadist websites. We don't know who starts these websites. Anyone can start a website. But in many cases, it's a group called the Search for International Terrorist Entities site, an operation that's been linked to the Israeli intelligence service. So we don't know if this tape is authentic. And many people in the intelligence community also believe, until the full analysis is done, that this may not, in fact, be bin Laden's voice on this particular audio tape.
But do you think that he's still alive?
Well, we know from the late Prime Minister of Pakistan, Benazir Bhutto, she actually said in a televised interview that she doubted that he was alive, because she said something about him being assassinated. Now, there was some recouping of that.
Who would have been assassinated by, if not the United States?
Well, I think she indicated it was by somebody close to him in his entourage. But the thing with these various claims, there was a videotape also released last year where it was a bin Laden. It almost looked like a cardboard cutout figure of what we see here in Washington. You can get your picture taken with President Obama, the First Lady, Michelle Obama, and only the lips were moving. And a lot of people looked at that and said, that looks a little bit strange as well. So this search for international terrorist entities sounds a lot like the search for extraterrestrial intelligence. And you might actually discover an extraterrestrial before you'll discover bin Laden right now, because many people, also in the Middle East, believe he died. Where he died is up to question. Was it in Afghanistan, or did he manage to get back to Yemen, his ancestral homeland, and did he die eventually of kidney failure?
Among all the great things that Wayne Madsen points out there, I'd never thought that site, of course, the website that brings us all these suspicious videos, is just an anagram of the acronym of SETI, of the Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence. But that's the key thing here. SITE and Intel Center, the folks who bring us these videos, have connections to intelligence agencies. So again, ask yourself, folks who harass middle school girls on MySpace or text each other nudie pics of each other, get picked up and arrested with the quickness, but somehow the most wanted terrorists in the world, we just can't find their IP. So tying in with all this, with the threataganda being raised, it's amazing how it goes day by day and week by week. It sort of builds up, and then it'll kind of cool off a little bit, and we'll talk about Avatar and other bullshit, and then it'll kind of get to... UK terror threat raised too severe. This from The Guardian. The threat of international terrorism to the UK was raised from substantial to the second highest level of severe, meaning an attack is highly likely. Alan Johnson, Home Secretary, said there was no intelligence to suggest an attack was imminent. The escalation reversed a decision in July to downgrade the likelihood of a terror attack from severe to substantial. Johnson said the change was not specifically linked to the increased threat from international terrorism following the failed Detroit plane bombing on Christmas Day or to any other incident. But just this morning, that's not all. I think the Al-Qaeda, Al-CIA to recording studio, you know, they'll work on some stuff for a while and then they have a flurry. So, again, this morning, Bin Laden rebukes U.S. on climate change. You gotta love this. From the New York Times, Osama bin Laden, the leader of Al-Qaeda, blamed the United States and developed countries for not halting climate change and said that the global economy should immediately abandon its reliance on the American dollar, according to an audio tape released Friday by the broadcaster Al Jazeera. Talk about climate change is not an ideological luxury, but a reality, Mr. bin Laden was quoted as saying in a report on Al Jazeera's English language website. All of the industrialized countries, especially the big ones, bear responsibility for the global warming crisis. The authenticity of the tape could not be immediately confirmed, and Al Jazeera, which is based in Qatar, did not say how it had obtained the message. Osama bin Laden, eco-warrior. That's one of the extra links to The Guardian, and we have more from Reuters on all the hot new singles from OBL. Dig it. We laugh to sometimes stop ourselves from crying, and again, what seems maybe so rote to myself and to regular listeners of Media Monarchy and shows like it and shows better than it. It's a staged shell game. So much of what we see are the shadows cast on the wall in the cave. But let's keep moving. And try and get more serious. So, OBL was talking about dumping the dollar. So let's move to the EconoCrash updates. Taxes, axes, boom, and busts. First, a local story. But it got national coverage. So we'll grab it from the New York Times. Oregon voters approve tax hike for corporations and rich families. Amid recession, high unemployment, and tight household budgets, voters in Oregon have agreed to raise taxes on people with higher incomes to pay for public education and social services. One of only five states with no sales tax, which is awesome, by the way. Oregon has long kept its corporate taxes relatively low. A statewide cap limits how much property taxes can rise, and before Tuesday, voters had not approved a statewide income tax increase in nearly 80 years. Each of the two tax proposals, measures 66 and 67, won decisively, in part because of support from large labor unions and because of how the taxes are directed. And I could see it everywhere I went. The mobilization was behind 66 and 67. We have a really well-made video. The song is a little long, so I don't have time to play it for you here, but I implore you to check out Fear the Boom and Bust. It's a parody not a parody, but it features two noted dead economists, Hayek and Keynes, and they're having a little battle rap about the boom and bust cycle. So that was brought to my attention over on Facebook.com/Media Monarchy, and you can get the full video over on Econ Stories, YouTube.com/Econ Stories, Fear the Boom and Bust. But again, more seriously now, all the other ugly econocrash updates. A frightening op-ed from Kitco.com. Financial folks who know what they're talking about. America's impending master class dictatorship. Hey, that kind of sounds like super class. Vatican bank charged with money laundering. What a surprise. That's from Press TV. Five bank failures bring the year's total to 9. That story is a week old, of course. FDIC Friday is coined, I believe, by Cryptogon.com. So I'm usually a week behind telling you about the bank failures because I don't really see it while I'm doing the show live. But that's from the Wall Street Journal. FDIC chief thief Sheila Bair received Bank of America mortgages while working on Bank of America bailout. Another great piece from allgov.com. Sam's Club cuts 11,200 jobs, 10% of their workforce. Verizon to cut 13,000 jobs as businesses reduce lines. Record number of young Americans jobless. That's from Reuters. 28% of Orlando area rental apartments, condos, and townhouses vacant. That's from the Orlando Sentinel. And if we hit up Bloomberg and head over to Manhattan, Tishman to hand over New York City's Stuyvesant town to its lenders. I'm close to folks who actually live in that place. It, I believe, is the largest private, you know, living facility in the country. It's massive. It's now official. The Dems have pushed the new debt ceiling to $14.3 trillion. We're not in debt. We just changed the term of what debt means. That's from ZeroHedge.com. South Carolina Lieutenant Governor Bauer basically said the needy owe something back for the aid that they got. But of course, it is the welfare state. And then they like to blame the victim. But Bauer also said something about feeding stray animals. Treasury Department to investigate Geithner about AIG bailout. Again, from allgov.com. Again, things don't look so good for some of the gangsters and banksters that are running the econocrash and the new financial world order. But again, a lot of these guys that we see that are on stage and are up in the ring on Saturday nights for our Friday night's main event, WrestleMania, these guys are all expendable. They're the front men to push agendas, and they're the shadows on the wall. It looks like they're fighting. It looks like they're against something. Gosh, the agenda sure seems to roll forward. So there's a lot to go into there, and I haven't fully investigated it myself. Treasury Department to investigate Geithner about AIG bailout. I'm sure we'll hit something about that here in just a minute again. A little update. Game over for the American middle class. That's from MyBudget360.com. Another fantastic entry in his Economics 101 series. CorbettReport.com, talking to noted author, economist, researcher F. William Ingdahl, talking about money and political power. Ingdahl.oilgeopolitics.net. And again, all those links are provided for you. So the update, like I said, regardless of Webster Tarpley trying to get us active. Senate confirms Bernanke for second term as chief of the private illegal Federal Reserve.
Federal Reserve Chairman Ben Bernanke has been confirmed for a second term to head the nation's central bank. The 70-30 vote came after hours of debate in which critics argued that Bernanke did not detect the coming crisis and failed to rein in the banking industry.
Prior to the recent financial crisis, as a member of the Board of Governors, Dr. Bernanke advocated monetary policies that contributed to excessive risk-taking.
But his supporters argue that once the crisis was in full bloom, he used aggressive and creative measures to bring stability to the financial system.
And he has kept a steady hand on the tiller in a perfect economic storm that has threatened this nation's underlying financial stability.
Wall Street has been rooting for Bernanke's confirmation. Stocks plunged last week amid news of mounting opposition, but then recovered when his prospects brightened. The confirmation fight and the attacks on the Fed have become a test of central bank independence. The Fed jealously guards its autonomy as a crucial element for carrying out monetary policy, even if it's not popular with politicians. Mark Hamrick, The Associated Press, Washington.
We don't have time to get into a full expose of the Federal Reserve. But they noted, oh, his prospects look dim until the White House sort of unprecedentedly last Saturday came out with a press release saying, old Bernanke's coming back. Senator Richard Shelby, Repug from Alabama, did say that Bernanke fiddled while our markets burned. It's also worth noting that no Fed chairman has ever been rejected by the Senate. Even Paul Adolf Volcker in 1983 was confirmed for a second term by a vote of 84-16. And so Bernanke got in again, this time thanks to 70-30. So that amazing Bloomberg piece that we mentioned isn't, of course, probably going to run in the newspaper. It's a commentary by David Riley. Secret banking cabal emerges from AIG shadows. The idea of secret banking cabals that control the country and global economy are a given among conspiracy theorists who stockpile ammo, bottled water, and peanut butter. After this week's congressional hearing into the bailout of American International Group Incorporated, you have to wonder if those folks are crazy after all. Wednesday's hearing described a secretive group deploying billions of dollars to favored banks operating with little oversight by the public or elected officials. We're talking about the Federal Reserve Bank of New York, whose role is the most influential part of the Federal Reserve system, apart from the matter of AIG's bailout, deserves further congressional scrutiny. If you've done any kind of research into this, you know that all these guys have always been connected, and they've all pretty much been set up by multi-generational serial killer families. So whether it's the Rothschilds and the Rockefellers, or the Fed, or the New York Fed, or Goldman Sachs, or Deutsche Bank, or Merrill Lynch, or AIG, they all go back to intelligence connections. Secret banking cabal emerges from AIG shadows. Well, I'll feel, you know, so much better now that they're at least saying, you know, maybe we're not crazy after all. Maybe we're not crazy after all. We're just, you know, reading their documents and things that they never thought we would read. Staying on the econo crash precipice, if you will. This is the first story that James and I covered on the latest New World Next Week video, which again is always available. You'll always see the most recent one at the top right of MediaMonarchy.com. The World Economic Forum in Davos kicked off Wednesday, the 27th. However, Davos security head found dead day before Economic Forum. Again, from the Big Brother Corporation, BBC, the police commander in charge of security at the World Economic Forum in Davos, Switzerland, that's D-A-V-O-S, was found dead in his hotel room. Marcus Reinhardt, 61, had been head of police in the Swiss canton of Graubünden since 1984. All indications point to a suicide, local police said in a statement. Police Captain Marcus Suter will take over security operations in Davos, where the five-day forum started on Wednesday. Some 2,500 business and political leaders from around the world are expected to attend. A brief mention of some of the contextual supplemental links provided for you. You can go to the World Economic Forum's website, Google search Davos 2010, more from Wall Street Journal, nowpublic.com, New York Times, bio and search information on Marcus Reinhardt. And the thing that I note is during the previous puppet administration, the war whores, there was a lot of suspicious deaths surrounding the military-industrial complex, of course, whether it's CIA agents, you know, being randomly beaten to death on a Sunday morning jog by people in a white van, or all the guys involved in the rogue B-52 flight from Minot Air Force Base, or any of those things. Now that we've moved into the latest scam, and it's been said that the last scam pulled by malicious misleaders is to loot everybody, now that we're into the new financial world order, it sure seems like a lot of dead CEOs are popping up, flying out of windows, having heart attacks. I'm sure it's just a coincidence. Let's now move to the latest massive news purge on MediaMonarchy.com. This one's called 128 News Purge, like a secret society meeting at the Midnight Mass, which was, of course, our intro song from Sloan. I suppose I should mention that I've been doing a lot more of these news purges as I try and get back up to speed on running not only MediaMonarchy.com, but CyberspaceWar.com and FoodWorldOrder.com. And all the other editing and research. And oh yeah, you know, life and love and all that stuff too. It's all a little much. And I try and do my best for you. And it stresses me out sometimes. And it's difficult. I mean, I don't think I probably have to tell you that. So, having said that, let's jump into this latest news purge. And start off with an interesting clip. We'll start off with drug war updates. Cheech and Chong get fair and balanced on Fox News.
And this classic comedic couple back together again with a new tour called Get It Legal. Joining us now, Richard Cheech-Marin and Tommy Chong. Good morning to you guys.
Good morning, how are you?
Good morning,
so many people,
thanks
course,
for having us on.
Oh, you're welcome. So many people, of course, remember the hysterical moments in those movies. But now you guys, you're acting then, kind of. And now you're actually living out this thing because you're starting a tour called Get It Legal Comedy Tour. What's the message you're trying to send to folks?
We want to get pot accessible, legal, you know, get people out of jail, you know, get cancer patients treated and people with MS. You know, pot can do a lot medically for people.
Yeah, we want to make beer illegal. Was a trade.
Okay, I get it. But here's the thing, on a real serious note, New Jersey, the last thing that Governor Corzine did before he left office was he signed into law making it legal, at least for medical marijuana in the state of New Jersey. It's the 14th state now. I know that you advocate this. You think that that's important for people who are suffering and you feel this is a good way to help them. But your message is actually more, you actually want to legalize pot for everyone, don't you?
Well, no, we want to legalize pot for everyone that wants to smoke it. You know, we don't want to legalize it for Republicans. We just want to really legalize it for people that really want to smoke it.
Well,
you know, you don't have to smoke it.
I mean, be fair and balanced. If you want to legalize it, shouldn't you want to legalize it for everyone?
I want to legalize it for everybody, but of age. But I want to make beer illegal.
I get your message this morning. All right, so when you have this comedy tour, I know this is a long time coming, because, Cheech, I think you were on our show saying that possibly the two of you would reunite together. How tough was it to convince Tommy to go out on the road with you?
No, it wasn't that tough. You know, we kind of came to the point in our lives where we go, if we're going to do anything, we better do it now, you know, because time's wasting here.
Yeah, it works perfect for my lifestyle. You know, I wasn't in jail, so I was available.
He was on a work release program.
Well, Tommy, I wasn't going to mention it, but you did actually go to jail. You spent 9 months there for selling drug paraphernalia, so you do have some experience.
Yeah.
No doubt the reason why you want marijuana to be legalized, right?
Yes, because right now I'm a felon for shipping a bong across the state line.
Yeah.
And you know, as a felon, there's a lot of things I can't do.
He can't vote for corrupt politicians.
Well,
seriously, it has medical value. And it also, you got to look at me, I'm 71 years old. I'm in the best health ever, and I smoke constantly. So to keep my health that way.
All right, well, we'll leave it up to all the parents watching potentially with their kids out there, whatever the message is here.
We don't want kids to smoke it.
Well, I'm not sure.
To be 35.
Okay.
35 is the cutoff.
The rule keeps changing, apparently, according to you guys. Get It Legal Comedy Tour kicks off next week. Cheech and Chan, thanks so much for being our guests.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, dear.
Get It Legal.
That was interesting.
It was interesting, and you know it's got to be pretty demeaning to go on Fox News and deal with those kind of hosts, but you got to give it to Cheech and Chong there, actually, for hitting a lot of important points. The idiocy of the alcohol society. No offense, I enjoy beer myself. But making beer illegal, making pot legal, of course being convicted and not being able to vote for those corrupt crooked politicians. So, a great clip. And again, folks, we're going down the ugly news purge. All your news, politics, conspiracies, and cover-ups here. And I should tell you, we're now into hour number two of MediaMonarchy.com. It's the 155th episode. My name is James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster of the site and show, MediaMonarchy.com, as well as FoodWorldOrder.com and CyberspaceWar.com. It's January 29th, 2010, and coming to you from the Portland Radio Authority, praradio.org, zeropointradio.com, revereradio.net, frolympia.org, berkeleyliberationradio.net, and on and on and on. And all the other fine affiliates, I thank you. I love you.